Tonight we are going to be in Judges chapter 14. Just kind of a little recap from last week. We talked about Samson's birth and how Manoah and his wife were told by the angel of the Lord that they were how they were supposed to raise their son and how he was supposed to be a Nazirite from birth and remain a Nazirite, have that Nazirite vow his whole life. And so that was part of their upbringing, but we also talked how Manoah's wife had to do that while she was carrying him, and so it became part of her lifestyle that turned into part of his lifestyle. And Manoah, of course, we talked about how he wanted to know more of his duty, what it was. It wasn't about the fact that the angel had came to his wife, but he wanted the angel to come back and tell us more what we're supposed to do. Don't get caught up in the things that have been done, but look for the things that God is wanting us to do. And then also we talked at the end where Manoah was so sure that they were going to die, and his wife said, well, you know, if we were going to die, he wouldn't have showed us this and wouldn't have told us this was going to happen. And so he had that understanding that he was an unholy person in the presence of a holy God, and that should cause fear, and it did in him. And sometimes I think that's our problem today, is we don't have that holy fear of God. And so she did bear Samson, and he grew, and it tells us that the Lord blessed him, and he began to move upon him. And so that's what we're going to see that first time tonight in chapter 14. And so many times we see Samson, we see him as that great strong man of the Bible, but we also need to see him as a broken man, because he was, and understand that God uses broken people all the time. But Samson was he was not a very moral person, but God still used him because that was God's plan. And sometimes there's times in our life when we just go against what God wants us to do, and that doesn't rule out that he can use us, but it just in the end is going to show us exactly where he wants us to be. And so we'll start in verse 1 of chapter 14. It says, "Now Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. So he went up and told his father and mother, saying, 'I have seen a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me as a wife.'" Now that was kind of the way things happened in the East back then, is it wasn't so much a relationship of love, it was just more of a relationship. When the young man would see the woman, he would go to his father and mother and say, "Hey, this is who I want for a wife, you go and work out all the details." And I know my daughter would have thrown such a fit if we'd have lived at that time. But not really. If her parents were okay with it, she really didn't have a choice. And that may play into this somewhat. Scholars don't really know, but in what happens in this chapter, you know, we don't really know that whether she was okay with it or not. But he sends his father and mother to Timnah, which is about 3 miles from where he lived when they were in Zora. Zora was about 3 miles away. And this was the daughters of the Philistines. And we know that they were of the Israelite tribe. And so we think, oh, he went to this other tribe, because his father and mother in chapter 3, it says, "Then his father and mother said to him, 'Is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren or among all of my people that you must go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?'" Well, if we go back to the law, or not necessarily the law, but what God had told them, there were 7 nations in Canaan that you were forbidden to marry into. The Philistines were not one of those. So he was not breaking one of the traditions or one of the laws by going to the Philistines, because there was 7 nations, 7 tribes listed that they were not allowed to marry into when they came into Canaan. And that list is I want to say it's in when they just came over in the Exodus, it was listed to where they could, these seven tribes, the Canaanites, the Ammonites, all the ites that were in there, there were seven of them that you were not allowed to marry into. Well, here he's marrying in the Philistines, and we know that at this time the Philistines were these two villages that they're 3 miles apart, but the Philistines were actually kind of in command of most of, they were dominant over the tribes of Israel at this point. They were not fighting per se at this point, but they were more or less ruling over a lot of the Israelites. Even though they were still the Israelite nation, they kind of had their way over them as the Philistines over the Israelites. And so they were not God-fearing people, and that's why Manoah and his wife tried to talk to Samson and say, well, can't you find somebody that, another way of saying it, can't you find a godly woman from our tribe instead of from these uncircumcised Philistines? So in other words, these ungodly people, you're going to these ungodly people to find a wife. And I love to read these passages in the Old Testament, and don't get me wrong, I don't add things to the Bible, but I wonder about the conversations that are never written. You know they're there, but they're not the ones that are written. Like the conversation, as Samson is growing up, and everybody else is drinking this and eating this and getting a haircut and all these things, and his parents have to tell him, you can't do that because... And they had to have told him what God was going to do. Why do I have this Nazirite vow? Why am I prohibited from getting my hair cut or for living this way like everybody else? Why can't I be like everybody else? And his parents had to tell him, no, because God has come to us before you were born, and he set you aside, and you are special. And I wonder how that conversation went with that young man. We don't know. There's no way for us to know. But I always think about those conversations because now he knows he's set aside to defeat the Philistines because that was part of the reason for the vow. God had told him, I'm going to use him to begin to take away the power of the Philistines. And so what does he do? Now, we don't know exactly how old he is, but he decides he's going to take a wife from that tribe that God has said, I'm setting you apart as a Nazirite to fight that people. Is that rebellion? We don't know. Or did Samson know that God was going to use that? Samson is the first judge that God did not use thousands of men or even 300 men to fight his battles. God is going to fight these battles against the Philistines basically with one man. And he was that one man. You know, if Gideon had been told, and again, there's no way of knowing, and I'm not adding anything, but if Gideon had been told when he was young, God's going to come to you at some point, and he's going to see you as a mighty warrior, and you're going to lead 300 people to take, and you're going to fight these people, and you're going to win this battle for God. In that case, he knows he's got help. At least at some point, he knows he's got at least 300 people with him. Samson is being set out to be this one man. Now, he's probably not told, well, you're the only one, you're going to have to do it by yourself. He's probably not told that, but he's told by his parents, I'm sure, in explaining why you can't get your hair cut, why you can't have anything from the vine. Those Nazirite vows, they had to have told him at some point why. And in that why, you go back to the reason that the angel of the Lord told them, they repeated that to him. And so he's going to take on the Philistines. He's going to lead the children of Israel against the Philistines. And so knowing that, he now goes 3 miles over to this other town and he sees this young woman. and he desires her for his wife. Now, like I said, is that rebellion or is it something that God revealed to him that because I'm going to use one man, I'm going to get on the inside? Okay? Because if he's one man from the outside, it's going to be really difficult. So what God is doing in his sovereign way is putting Samson into the Philistine nation. Okay? By creating this desire, whether it was Samson's bad choice or whether it was Samson's desire to that God led him to Timnah to see this woman, we don't know. Because the translation for "she pleases me well" that we'll get to twice in this chapter is an understanding that he wants her for a wife, but she's right in my eyes is the actual translation for "she pleases me well." Well, she's right in my eyes could be two different ways of looking at it, and scholars don't know. It could be that understanding that in my eyes, she's beautiful. In my eyes, she's exactly what I need. In my eyes, that type of deal. But also, if God had revealed to him, and we don't know, if God had revealed to him, this is the woman that's right for what I want. And so he tells his parents, she's right in my eyes because I understand what God's going to do. Scholars argue over those two on which it is. And so he tells his father to go get her, and they say she's an uncircumcised Philistine. Wouldn't you love to start off in-laws that way? That uncircumcised daughter-in-law of mine, that type of deal. So anyway, they did not approve of this. They had tried to talk Samson. So to this point in his life, they had kept him in the Nazarite vow. And so for whatever reason, he desires this woman and says that she pleases me well, go get her. And they didn't want to do it. But in 4 it says, but his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord. So that's where the scholars are thinking, maybe Samson did know that it was of the Lord that he was to be with this Philistine woman. But his father and mother did not know that. So it kind of insinuates that Samson did, that he was seeking an occasion to move against the Philistines. So maybe Samson did know that God was leading him in that direction. But the father and mother did not know. Excuse me. Goes on, it says, for at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. So they kind of had control over Israel, like I said. And so Samson went down, verse 5, so Samson went down to Timnah with his father and mother and came to the vineyards of Timnah. Now this was in that 3-mile trek, and the way we kind of understand it, there was a lot of vineyards in that area. It's a very, very lush place. And so as they're going down, there's vineyards on both sides. And the father and mother, he's taking them to meet this woman, taking them to set up this first time of betrothal for Samson and this woman. And so they're going down, and somehow in that time, it says, now to his surprise, which is Samson, a young lion came roaring against him, and the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he tore the lion apart as one would have torn apart a young goat, though he had nothing in his hands. But he did not tell his father and mother what he had done. Where were they? I mean, it's in a 3-mile, but you know, I stop and I think, if he's in the prime of his life, I guarantee you, if Nathan and Donis and I took off on a walk, it wouldn't be very long in that 3 miles before Nathan would be out of our sight. I don't know. It doesn't tell us. But for whatever reason, Mom and Dad weren't close. Now, maybe he was just wandering around and he was lollygagging and they were walking on. Maybe he was excited about getting on to Timnah to see this young lady, And they were just older and walking slower. But for whatever reason, they weren't there. And this, to his surprise, this young lion comes roaring out against him. Now, there's so many times that I see, read things in the Bible, and I just never picture lions and wild beasts just being in that area. And it comes out of this vineyard and attacks him, and he's surprised. I think he's surprised in two things here. One, the fact that this lion comes roaring out after him, but I think he's also surprised at what happens next. Because this is the first time we're told of in Samson's life where the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. And that had to have been a shock. But what we need to understand is those same two surprises happen to us. We can be going along and everything be perfectly fine. We can be focused on what's ahead of us. He's focused on, hey, I'm going to Timnah. My dad's going to get this woman for my wife. And he's focused on what's ahead. And all of a sudden, trouble comes out of nowhere. We can be doing that. We can be following what God has called us to do. We can be in the midst of focused and headed in the right direction, the direction that God has planned for our lives. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere comes the king of beasts to attack us. And that surprises us. Now, it's understandable why a lion jumping out would surprise him. Or is it? Think about that for just a moment. He's surprised that it's there, but he lives less than 3 miles from here. Don't you think he knew there were lions around there? I mean, when I walk by someplace, I know that if a snake comes out of the trail, I'm surprised and I'm scared to death. But before I get on that trail, what am I thinking? There's probably snakes there because I live around here. He lived within 3 miles of this, and this wasn't the only lion in the area. There were wild beasts like that there. So even though he knew the possibility of the lion was in that area, he was still surprised. Even though you know Satan's going to attack you tomorrow, you're still going to be surprised. Why should we be surprised? When I walk by the edge of the lake, my thought is there's a snake somewhere here. I know it. Down at the Walnut Festival, every time I'd walk across that bridge and I would see kids sitting on both sides, they'd be sitting on those rocks. All I could think of was that picture I'd seen of all the snakes by those chunks of concrete. And I'm standing up there on the bridge as I'm walking across, like, okay, where's the snake? Where's the snake? And I'm up on the bridge. They're sitting down there. When I know there's a possibility of a snake, I'm looking for it. But when I see it, I'm still surprised. I'm still scared. Samson is walking down the road doing what he's supposed to, and he's surprised that this lion, who I'm sure he knows because he's lived there his whole life within 3 miles of where this is at. And so I'm sure that this is, and it's a young lion that's there. So I'm sure he's heard of and instances where there's lions around there. And so he's shocked and he's surprised that this roaring lion comes out against him. But he's also shocked and surprised, I believe, in the fact that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him and he was able to, with his bare hands, kill this lion. Because he'd probably never heard of that. If there had been lion attacks that were in the Zora newspaper or whatever, I'm sure that it never come out that, oh, so-and-so grabbed a lion and killed it with his bare hands. That had never happened. And so the strength that he had for whatever he did before, and we don't really know, but whatever work he had done with his dad or with whoever or on the family farm or wherever they lived, he probably had some strength, but not like this. Why do you think he was surprised even with that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him? Because he'd been told by his parents that it was going to happen. But when the Spirit of the Lord actually took over, I think it surprised him. And when we know that the Spirit of the Lord lives within us, and then one day we surrender to it and it is just amazing. The strength, the power, the understanding of what the Spirit of God can do when it moves in our life still surprises us. I think He's surprised for both things. And I think we're still surprised for both things. I think we're surprised when Satan attacks us. And I think we're surprised when we see how God takes over. But that's the key. God took over. He tore this lion apart. But He did not tell His father or mother what He had done. Don't know why. Man, I'd have been telling everybody everywhere, look what I did. Because nobody else had ever done this before, I'm sure. And He did not even tell the closest people to Him what He had done. Doesn't tell us why. It's just one of those questions make you go, that's not normal. Verse 7, it says, then He went down and talked with the woman. Now, this was something that wouldn't have been allowed to do. A young man couldn't talk with the woman other than if they were betrothed. So, in other words, that time when his father came and he set it up, that's what this verse means. He went down and he talked with the woman and she pleased him well. And again, that's the same term. She was right in his eyes. She knew that he was the one for her. Whether it was physical attraction or whether it was because God had revealed to him, this is the woman that we're going to fulfill my plan through. And so he was able to talk to her. So at this point, they had probably started that time when they were what we'd call today engaged. And then after some time, that's basically probably a year. That was what the engagement time would last. So he would go and his dad would set this up. And then he would go back home after some time for probably a year. And when he returned to get her, so after a year, he would come back. They would go and they would set it all up and they'd decide, hey, I'll bring you 3 goats for her type of deal. Whatever the father's decided, and we'll have this agreement and we'll be okay type of deal. And then they would go away for a year. And then at the end of a year, that was the engagement period. At the end of the year, they would come back and they'd have a week-long ceremony of a wedding. A day is plenty. But they would have it for a week. They would have it for a week. And he returned to get her. And he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion. And behold, a swarm of bees and honey were inside the carcass of the lion. I read a deal this week that it kind of struck me as odd, but when the carcass of the lion, when he killed the lion and he tossed it over into the vineyard or wherever it was at, what's going to come? All the vultures and all those, you know, animals that are going to come and eat on it. And what's going to happen is a bee was considered a clean animal. Okay, so you have all of those jackals and whatever other type of unclean animals come and feast on this dead carcass. And then once all the bad was gone, then a clean bee would come up and show up and put the honey inside. But all the evil was eaten out of it before that bee, which is a clean animal, would come and put something productive inside it. That's just a side note. You got to get rid of all the garbage. You got to get rid of all the evil. You got rid of all the unclean before that clean bee can come in and set up and make something productive. And there's a lot of times I look at my life and I say, I've got a lot of yuck in there that needs to be cleaned out so God can bring in the honey. But he comes by and he sees and he turns aside and he sees the carcass and behold, a swarm of bees and honey are in the carcass of the lion. And he took some of it in his hands and went along eating. And when he came to his father and mother, he gave some to them and they also ate. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of a lion. Because the Nazarite vow said, don't touch anything dead. He had begun to break his Nazarite vow. He didn't tell mom and dad. Earlier, we're not sure why he didn't brag that he killed it, but we're pretty sure we know why he didn't tell him where that honey came from. So his father went down to the woman, and Samson gave a feast there, for young men used to do so. And it happened when they saw him that they brought 30 companions to be with him. Now, what they would do is they would come together, and actually the bride would be with her friends. That's where the bridesmaids all come from. And they would celebrate with some family members in one area, and then another area, another apartment, another house, another location, there would be a place where they would set up for Samson and his groomsmen, or the people of that area who were part of maybe her family, but yet men that would be able to be around Samson and kind of get to know him more and kind of make the connection of the two families and the people of the town. But they brought 30. That's a lot. But Samson was a lot. So by this time, he's probably not some scrawny little guy, okay? And so their intentions, when it says they brought 30 of them that were there, there's something behind that. Those 30 companions were probably more spies. Scholars believe they're probably more spies than they were wedding groomsmen or companions. Then Samson said to them, "Let me pose a riddle to you." Now, this wasn't something that Samson just come up with on his own. This was actually an Eastern custom where when you were at a gathering, you would come up with, someone would come up with a riddle, and they would have prizes. And whoever solved the riddle would take home this prize. And so it's kind of like door prizes today. You know, you have those things where you come in and you play a game, and whoever wins the game takes home the prize. Well, this was the custom in the East back then, and still is some places when they have gatherings. Someone will come up with a riddle, and whoever solves that riddle gets to take home the prize. And so it wasn't like Samson just decided, hey, I'm going to brag about myself maybe here and bring out this lion thing. No, he was trying to come up with a riddle, because if nobody could solve your riddle, then they had to give you something, okay? And so Samson is going to pose this riddle, excuse me, and so he tells him, "Let me pose this riddle for you. If you can correctly solve and explain it to me within the 7 days of the feast, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing," because there's 30 of them. So it's basically Samson against these 30 Philistines. And he's telling them, hey, I've got a riddle, and if you can solve it, I'll give you all these clothes. But if you can't explain it to me, then you shall give me 30 linens and 30 changes of clothing. And they said to him, "Pose the riddle that we may hear it." So they take the challenge. These are guys that have come there. They've probably come there just to get to know him. Here's this big guy. Why is he wanting to marry into the Philistines? He's an Israelite. We don't have anything in common. And he wants to come here and he wants to marry this girl from our village. So pose this riddle. We think we're smarter than you. So he said to them, "Out of the eater comes something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet." That's pretty good. I mean, for him just to be walking down to think about this. "Now for 3 days they could not explain the riddle. But it came to pass on the seventh day that they said to Samson's wife, 'Entice your husband that he may explain the riddle to us, or else we will burn you and your father's house with fire.'" These are great companions to have at your wedding, okay? If you don't get us the information we want, we're going to burn you and your father and your father's house with fire. "Have you invited us in order that to take what is ours? Is that not so?" So they are against her. They think that she's brought Samson in. Now they're turning on her. They were against Samson, and now they're turning on her. And we know that it started, the riddle They couldn't figure it out for 3 days. And then it comes to pass on the seventh day. Man, we're running out of time. That they're going to go to Samson's wife. This girl that her family is setting up with this Israelite. If she's in love with him, if she wants to be his wife, that type of deal, then she might not have done anything. But they're threatening her, so we don't know. 16 says, then Samson's wife wept on him and said, you only hate me. You do not love me. You have posed a riddle to the sons of my people, but you have not explained it to me. Samson is not a very bright young man. Okay? And as we go through this, we will see that when he gets with Delilah, it's even worse. But here, he hasn't seen her for a year. He saw her one time, wasn't really allowed to talk to her until they were engaged, and then he's away for a year. Then he comes back, and he's separated in this apartment. She's at her house, and he's given this riddle. And so they're allowed to meet and greet through the time, but for the most part, they're still kept separate. And so when she does come to him, she comes crying, saying, you hate me. Well, he just spent a year waiting on her. He's the one that chose her. But she's saying this, you hate me. You don't love me because you've brought up this riddle and you've not even explained it to me. And he said to her, look, I have not explained it to my father or my mother. So should I explain it to you? Why did he not explain it to his father and mother? Not because he was afraid that they would tell somebody, but because it came from a carcass, because it came from dead, and he was not able to touch the dead. And so he says, why should I explain it to you? Now she wept on him the seventh day, the 7 days, while their feast lasted, and it happened on the seventh day that he told her, because she pressed him so much. Then she explained the riddle to the sons of her people. How long did it take her to run to those other people? He explained it to her on the seventh day. Well, the seventh day is going to start on the night before, but he probably explained it to her sometime after they awoke and got back together on that seventh day, the last day of the feast. And before 6 o'clock that night, she had already went and told these men. And so she was able to go and tell them. It says, and it happened on the seventh day that he told her because she pressed him so much. Then she explained the riddle to the sons of her people. So the men of the city said to him, on the seventh day before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey and what is stronger than a lion? And there's no way they could have figured that out, and he knew that. And he said to them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle. That's a farming analogy that they would have understood. In other words, if you hadn't messed and got into my wife's head somehow, then you would have never known this. He knew that they had cheated. Maybe that's the splinter that God was putting in there to start this trouble between the Philistines and the Israelites. Because Samson's already connected now. He's married. He's went through the engagement process at this time. They're at the end of the engagement. But what's going to happen now is this: they've told the riddle, so now he is, you know, he knows that they've lied. He knows they've cheated, and so that would ethically be a way of getting out of owing the 30 sets of clothes. But Samson didn't take that out. Verse 19, then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, and he went down to Ashkelon, which is about 23, 24 miles to the west, southwest of where they were at. Now, I thought about that this week as I'm reading that, and I'm thinking, that's walking to Bolivar. Wow. So the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him, and he goes to Ashkelon, and he kills 30 of their men. Now, Ashkelon is, like I said, about 24 miles away, but it is one of those cities, one of the five cities of the Philistines. They had five major cities, and it is one of those five that always caused trouble for the Israelites. Timnah was not one of those that caused a lot of trouble. But Ashkelon was a place where there was Philistine, basically what you might call army bases is what we would call them today. But they were ones that always caused trouble for the Israelites. And so he goes there. So what's actually happened? God in his sovereignty has got him into to the town that, you know, of Timnah. He's connected with the Philistines, and now he's going to go from there into a little bit deeper into the Philistine camp. And what's he going to do? He's going to kill 30 men. And he killed 30 men and took their apparel. Now, that was not a custom in fighting. You might take necklaces, you might take earrings, you might take their sword or their shield or something like that, but you didn't take their clothes. That just was unheard of. So in the fact that it was unheard of, it wasn't just like a skirmish between Israel and the Philistines. There was something personal here. This guy, he not only killed them, he took their clothes. He stripped them and took their clothes. How embarrassing. That's going to cause trouble. And that's the whole point. And so he goes and he kills the 30 men, and he took their apparel and gave the changes of clothing to those who had explained the riddle. Now stop just a minute here and think. He has just went and killed this guy. We're assuming with a sword, maybe it was with his hands, but I'm thinking some of those 30 garments probably had blood on them. And wouldn't that be great? Hey, he's going to bring us 30 sets of clothes. He brings back these bloody, stained clothes. What a prize. But that's what he does. He brings them back. Now, doesn't say anything about the receiving of the clothes. It just says he gave the changes of the clothes to those that explained the riddle. So his anger was aroused, and he went back up to his father's house. And Samson's wife was given to his companion, who had been his best man. And this chapter stops at a terrible point. But we're going to go ahead and stop there tonight. But the key is Samson is at his future wife's house, or at least it appears to be future wife. They've went through the engagement process. He knows that she's the one that told. And he goes and he fulfills the oath. He holds up his end of the bargain. He goes and gets 30 sets of clothes. Doesn't say they have to be clean, but he goes and he gets them. And his anger is so aroused by what has taken place. Not the fighting, but the fact that his wife had told them that they had went to her and they had got her somehow to tell the riddle. And instead of going back to her house, his anger was aroused, and he went back up to his father's house. Now, he didn't say he was coming back. He came back and gave the clothes to the 30 people, and he didn't go over. It doesn't tell us that he went over and told his future father-in-law that, hey, I'll be back. I'm going to cool off. He doesn't say anything like that. It just says that after he gave the clothes, he was so angry that he went back to his father's house. And so what happens is that her father takes Samson's wife, and she is called his wife at this point because the engagement process has technically went through. That year, they came back, they had the 7-day feast, so legally everything is done, and Samson's wife is given to his companion, which would have been one of those guys that it doesn't say anything about it being a friend from home. When we think of best man, we think of that person that stands up by the groom that they've known forever or that they're really close to. That's what we think of as a best man. But that companion that he has here, That is somebody that basically was just there to represent the bridal party that would stand up by Samson. The father, even though it's explained as Samson's wife, gives her, literally gives her, to the best man. And so Samson is not there at this point. It's going to get into it in chapter 15. He's going to go back and find this out, and it's going to cause more problems. So as we close tonight, there's so many things with Samson that we can see as we understand what God is doing behind the scenes. If we look from Samson's viewpoint, we don't really know exactly what all he knows. If we look from Manoah and his wife, they were left in the dark the whole time. They didn't know he killed the lion. They didn't know the riddle. They didn't know. They were just out of it. The future wife didn't know anything until he explained the riddle to her. Samson, we don't know the extent of what he knew, but God took and used everything that went on to bring about exactly what he wanted. Sometimes we try to decipher exactly what God is going to do. Man, I need to know. God, if you'll just show me exactly what I'm supposed to do, if you'll tell me exactly what I'm supposed to say, God, if you'll just do this. Sometimes we just need to know that God's in control. Samson, did he make the best choices? No. God's still sovereign. God's desire is that we make the right choices. But sometimes when I mess up, the first thing I want to do is shut down. But understand that just because I mess up, just because you mess up, doesn't mean God is not sovereign. God is still in control. We have to keep the vow that we've made to him. Samson began to break down his Nazirite vow here when he's touching the carcass. There are so many times that we just reach out and touch the carcass. Well, I just did it one time. Made a big difference because that's where it starts. So as we close tonight, one thing that jumped out at me, another thing I guess I might say, was he saw this Philistine woman and he went and he chose her for a wife. She wasn't forbidden, but just because something's not forbidden doesn't mean it's good. Couldn't get that out of my head. It wasn't forbidden to take a wife from the Philistines. There are a lot of things in our life that are not forbidden, but they are definitely not for the best. We need to understand that. His parents tried to tell him, don't go with this uncircumcised Philistine. Go with a person that loves God. He chose to go the other way. So, let's close. Father, we thank you so much for all that you do. Lord, we thank you for your word and how we see that you are sovereign, how we see that you are going to be glorified. Father, help us to just be what you desire us to be. To make the right choices, to follow you, to serve you, to honor you, to glorify you in all that we do. Lord, help us to share the love of Jesus Christ with those around us. In your name we pray. Amen.